This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the invitation. So I'll be telling you about some of the research in my group that focuses on understanding what happens when proteins don't behave properly. And one of the things that happens when they don't behave properly is that they clump together and they form very large assemblies. And this process of self-assembly can be toxic to the body and can lead to neurodegeneration. And Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, these are examples of neurodegeneration tied to protein self-assembly. So I thought I'd give you first a bit of historical background to just set the stage where we were 100 plus years ago in understanding these diseases and where we are now. And then I'm going to talk about some of my own research that focuses on a protein called tau. And this protein, when it self-assembles in an incorrect manner, is linked to Alzheimer's disease, but also to a host of other neurodegenerative diseases. So, centuries ago, people already knew that things don't always go well when you age. So some people age gracefully, but in other cases, as people age, they start losing their memory, losing language function, losing motor function. And this was called senility, dementia, but we really didn't know what it was about. About 100 years ago, scientists started taking brains and slicing them open and taking cross-sections, and that's where they started seeing net differences between a healthy brain and a brain of someone with dementia. So I'm showing here a healthy brain and a brain with dementia. And what you can note is that in the case of dementia, the brain is actually smaller. So there's loss of brain matter. Part of the brain has died. And when you reach this state, it's too late to do anything. So we really need to understand how this happens so we can halt it in a timely manner. So at the same time, 100 years ago, when they were slicing brains, they were also staining them. So they were using various dyes. And when they put these dyes on a tissue, they found something quite unusual. They found these colored areas here. And what this is clumps or tangles or assemblies of proteins. Proteins that should not be stuck together are suddenly seen to be stuck together in diseased brains. So what is a protein? I've been talking a little bit about proteins sticking together. I think you all know what a protein is on some level. You know, you have to eat meat, eat legumes, eat vegetables that have proteins in them, because proteins are made of amino acids, and these amino acids are essential for us to function. We need them to, for example, build our own muscle mass. So if you buy some protein mix, you'll see on the back a list, and these are the amino acids. And there are many of them, but the only ones I want you to focus on are leucine and proline, because these are going to be important for when I talk about tau. So proteins are made of amino acids. They're essentially a long chain of amino acids. And these proteins play a lot of functions in our body. So here are two examples. Hemoglobin, which is an important protein in our red blood cells, what it does is it transports oxygen throughout your body. So this is an example of a protein that has a binding site for oxygen, and it can transport it. So transport is one job of proteins. Another job would be in the immune system. So when you have a cold, you can see I'm losing my voice, I have a bit of a cold, my body is responding, and the antibodies that your body produces are in fact proteins. Many proteins, like the ones I just showed you, have a nice shape. They're called globular proteins. But the ones that I'm studying are not so nicely shaped. They're actually intrinsically disordered. So these are proteins that don't have a single shape. They're fairly extended. And because of that, they have a much greater tendency to self-assemble and stick to other proteins. So still 100 years ago, the first big discovery was made that in Alzheimer's disease, there are two proteins that are involved, the amyloid beta protein and the tau protein. This is a sketch of a neuron. So I'm going to focus in my talk on the tau protein. But an important thing is that even though we found these two proteins implicated in Alzheimer's disease, this is not unique. It turns out that many, many neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, also involve the abnormal assembly of various proteins. So neurodegeneration linked to proteins seems to be a quite general phenomenon. All right, so now we're 50 years ago. What did we know? Well, we know we need to learn a little bit more about these clumps because they're linked to disease. So there are techniques like TEM and X-ray diffraction that show that these clumps are not balls. They're actually very, very long extended structures known as fibrils or amyloid fibrils. NMR is another technique that can give you more insight into what these structures look like. And so here is a structure that was solved using this method. But the real breakthrough actually came just a few years ago when scientists started to use cryo-EM and applied this to studying these clumps. So cryo-EM is a microscopy technique where you freeze your sample and then you bombard it with electrons and you're in this way able to image. So this is an image of one of these clumps, and here is a reconstruction. So you can use computer modeling to reconstruct and get a lot of atomistic detail into what these fibrils look like. And just to show you that this is really breaking news in the field, here is a paper that was just published a few months ago that reports on a new structure of the protein that I'm going to talk about, the tau protein. So we know that proteins can stick together under pathological conditions, and this can lead to disease. But what we don't actually know is what causes the disease. So we study various aspects of this assembly process because we believe that there's not just one aspect that's linked to disease. So we study the formation of oligomers. These are small assemblies. The very early stages of aggregation appears to be toxic. And we also study fibrils because we know, especially in the tau protein I'm going to talk about, that these fibrils or pieces of fibrils can seed other cells and spread the disease from cell to cell. But in this talk, I'm going to focus primarily on the fibrils. So let me tell you about tau. So what I'm showing you here is a picture of the inside of your brain, and the structures that you see here are neurons. So neurons is just our word for nerve cells. And so these are critical for life. Every thought that you have, every memory that you form is really just a communication between neurons. And that's shown here with the light, the little electric signals. That's when your brain nerve cells are communicating. And this is where tau comes in. So for communication to happen, you need to exchange small molecules called neurotransmitters from one neuron to another. And this is done by a protein that carries a vesicle or a bag of these neurotransmitters along a tract called a microtubule. And what the tau protein does is it binds to a microtubule and stabilizes it. And so let me show you a little movie that was generated by the National Institute of Health that shows what happens when this tau protein does not bind properly to the microtubule. All right, so what you're seeing here is your nerve cell, and we're going to go right into it. So we're going inside, and you can see here the microtubule, the tau proteins, and you can see a motor protein that's dragging these neurotransmitters so it can exchange them. These are serotonin, dopamines, things that you find in antidepressants. Aha, but here's something happening. You can see that tau is falling off the microtubule. And so many terrible things are happening, but we're going to focus on this thing here. So you can see that these tau proteins are now sticking together, forming these extended entities. And here you see the nerve cell dying as a result of this aggregation process. So to sum up, tau plays a good role in the body by binding to and stabilizing microtubules. But there's also a pathological role, and that's by forming these aggregate species. So we want to understand this process of aggregation, and we're going to use a combination of computer simulations, which is what my group does, and also experiments done by collaborators at UCSB and at Northwestern University. So here's a schematic of the structure of tau. These are the amino acids that I was talking about earlier in shorthand notation. The purple region, the repeat domain, is what is relevant for us today. This is the region that aggregates. So there's not just one disease associated with tau self-assembly, there are many diseases. And I've listed various acronyms here. AD is Alzheimer's disease. You have CBD, PSP, various different diseases where you have tau aggregation in different parts of the brain with slightly different symptoms, but it's the same protein that's implicated in these diseases. So cryo-EM showed very recently that different diseases that involve tau assembly have slightly different structures of the assembled complex. So here are various different diseases with various different assembled structures. And it looks like there's only one, but you have to think of this as many of them stacked together to make a long fibril. So what we were interested in discovering is whether there is a commonality between them. Is there something that these slightly different structures have in common that could serve as the core of aggregation? So if you look, you know, this part is sticking out here, and it's arranged next to the blue one here. So there are various things that are different. But what appears to be common is this entity here, where you have the blue and the green strand, a loop, and a strand. So we hypothesize that if we cut this segment out of the full-length protein, we would have a small mini-protein that would self-assemble and make amyloid fibrils. So that's exactly what we did. We cut out this region here of the full-length protein, which is this little region here, and this gives us a mini protein that's only 19 amino acids long, as opposed to the full-length protein that's 400-ish amino acid long. So we call this protein JR2R3 because it's at the junction of the R2 and R3 domains. And what makes this protein so interesting is that it has proline 301 in it. This is an interesting location because in real people and in the real full-length protein, there is a familial mutation. So this is a mutation, a genetic mutation that some people carry, where the P is changed to an L. I'll remind you what these are. P is proline, and L is leucine. So if you have this mutation, you will develop early onset Alzheimer's or some other form of tau disease. So we wanted to check whether, in the context of the small system, this mutation would also cause accelerated aggregation. And that's exactly what we saw. When we made this mutation, here's a mutant and here's the wild type, we see faster aggregation and much more of these fibrils forming. So we want to understand, how does this happen? Everything I've shown you are pictures of the end product, but we want to understand the beginning of the aggregation process. And that's where computer simulations are uniquely suited to do so, because we can look at the details of a protein as it assembles. So a technique I'm going to use is called molecular dynamic simulations. And I'm showing here the computers where we run our simulations. This is on a large-scale supercomputer. So the entire room is filled with racks and racks of computers, and we use about 100 computers at a time to do our simulations. So molecular dynamic simulations is integrating numerically Newton's equations of motion. So what we're doing is we're tracking the position and the velocity of our protein, of every atom on our protein, as we move in time. And like that, we can study how the protein comes together. These are very, very extensive simulations, which is why we use supercomputers. And so I'll just give you a little snapshot of how we do this. So the way we do it is we start our simulations by putting our protein in a box of water. So this is a computer box of water. So we have a lot of molecules that represent water, and we have our protein. What we do after equilibrating our system is we send it to these different computers, and we run simulations at different temperatures. The reason we do that is because we want to stretch our protein out. And when you go at high temperatures, you put more energy in your system, and they can move more. And then we periodically swap conformations, and so we're able to sample the space that these proteins visit. And the end of our simulation is a collection of structures. The next thing we do is we take these structures and we group them together. And what I'm showing you here is a probability map. So we're trying to see, where are these proteins? Can we group them together in families? And what kind of structures do we have? So the axes here are just metrics that tell us something about the shape of our protein. Here I have my wild type, and here I have my mutant. And the first thing that you can see is that the color scheme is different. Blue means a lot of population. So what you see here is that in the wild type, we're favoring one structure here, whereas in the mutant, you can explore a lot of conformational space. What we find is that the structure that you see in the wild type is a hairpin structure. And I'm going to call this a protective structure. It's a structure that is not conducive to forming large clumps. Whereas our mutant populates a lot of structures that are able to form large assemblies. Let me show this a little more clearly. Here is our fibril end product. My fibril protective structure, if you look at it, it has all of these lines here. These lines are hydrogen bonds. What it's saying is that this hairpin conformation is happy the way it is. It has no incentive to interact with other proteins. So it's really a dead end when it comes to making fibrils. But the other structures are much more open. And in our simulations, we see that these structures can form larger entities. And as we do higher order simulations, we form larger and larger systems. So these are candidates to grow into fibrils. Very recently, our collaborator at Northwestern, Professor Song-Yi Han, has been able to solve the cryo-EM structure of this small segment of tau that we're looking at. And this is a structure that she solved. And so just to show you the predictive power of our simulations, which we performed prior to this structure being solved, here is the cryo-EM structure, and here is more resolution. So they were able to refine it to actually find the positions of the amino acids. Here are simulation results. So here is one of the structures that we found, and you can see it in the experimental structure. It's here, and it's here. It's the strand, loop, strand. The second item you see inside of the cryo-EM structure are two extended entities. It's this, which you can see found here again. So the structures that we predicted in our simulations are found inside the structure of the cryo-EM. So this is a nice example of experiments and simulations working together where we can cross-validate our structures this way. So does this have any relevance to the disease? Because as I said, we cut this segment out and we claim that it would form fibrils, which it does. But does this impact tau, full-length tau within the cell? And what it turns out is that it does. And this is work done in collaboration with Professor Kosick at UCSB. So what he did is he took our small construct, made fibrils out of them, and injected them inside a cell. So this is your cell before he put our fibrils in, and this is the cell after he put our fibrils in. And what he found is that our small fibrils were able to recruit tau that was naturally in the cell. The conclusion is that this segment that we identified appears to be the core unit of tau assembly. This small segment is enough to recruit full-length tau and form disease-related fibrils. What is, I would think, even more exciting is that Ken found that these fibrils that we generated starting from this small unit can propagate from cell to cell. So here is an example of cell division. So this was a cell that had these tau fibrils in it, and now it's dividing and making a daughter cell that also has this tau fibril information in it. So this is a little bit like a prion. So you may know about prions in the context of mad cow disease. This was a disease where people would eat meat, and the meat had this protein, and this protein would clump together and make very similar amyloid fibrils in the brain, and this disease would spread. Now, this is not quite the same thing, but it's similar in spirit, where you can have a cell that would divide and then spread this information to another cell, and then this would be a mechanism by which tau disease neurodegeneration could spread around your cell. So where are we going with this? So I'm showing you these two animals. This is a woodpecker, local to this area, and these sheep that are not local to this area. But you can see that both of these animals collide. Their heads are impacted over and over again. Well, we know that in humans, this is a big problem. Football players in particular, after years of having their heads hit together, develop injury. So it's traumatic brain injury. You can also have injury after having a severe concussion. And if you look at the brains of former athletes involved in football and other types of activities where you bash your brains together, you see that they have tau disease. They have assemblies of this protein tau in their brains, these long extended fibrils. So we're interested in these animals because they hit their heads repeatedly, yet they don't get tau diseases, but they have tau proteins. We have tau, but we're not the only ones. Most animals have tau as well. Now, it could be that they don't have tau diseases because they don't live very long and it takes a while to develop some damage, but it could also be that they have a natural protection. So if you remember, I showed you my amino acid chart from the pea proteins, and I said, remember proline and leucine? And in the mutant I showed you in my simulations, I had mutated a proline to a leucine, and when you do the proline to leucine mutation, suddenly aggregation is accelerated. Well, if you look at the tau sequence of these two animals, you find that they're highly enriched in proline. And proline is what I said gave us this protective hairpin. The leucine took away this protection and opened up the structure of tau. So we're now examining, through simulation and experiment, the tau sequences of these animals to try to reinforce this hypothesis of proline being a protective agent. And I should say, you know, this leucine mutation is a genetic mutation that's pathological. Most of us have the correct proline, and this is what we want, right? If we all had mutations at that site, we might all get early onset Alzheimer's or some other tau diseases. So I'm going to leave you with this image, which will hopefully not give you a seizure. And I'd like to thank you for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.